Sometimes I look in the mirror and wonder what I'll look like when I'm 80 or 90, assuming I'm lucky enough to live that long. I try to imagine me with deep wrinkles, sagging skin, drooping eyelids. It's a little scary, to tell you the truth. Photographer Phil Toledano decided to take on that fear of the future and of what he might become, and so he took a DNA test, he consulted psychics, and he hired a special effects makeup artist to help him become different versions of his future self. And then he went out onto the streets of New York City and had himself photographed. The project turned into a book and a photo exhibition called Maybe.
Everyone I really loved, both my parents, my aunt and my uncle, everyone had died in the course of 3 years. Mm. It was sort of like a Toledano extinction event. And so I became really apprehensive and really worried about how my life might go, all the unexpected, sharp, dark turns that life might have in store for me. You know, I'd walk down the street and I'd see someone who was disabled or homeless or stricken with some kind of disease, and I'd think to myself, there was a point in their life when they never thought that would happen to them, when they were a normal person, when they were a kid loved by their parents, and now this is that they're a homeless person. And I used to think, what's in store for me? And so I decided I would make my fears tangible. I would make them as real as I could make them.
So you set out to externalize your fears. You got really kind of scientific about this.
Well, there's not very many options for looking into in the future. Of course, I took a DNA test, which told me all sorts of illnesses that I might get. I looked at insurance company statistics. I spoke to fortune tellers and psychics and tarot card readers and numerologists, anyone who had any kind of astrological profession. And it was funny because I would talk to the astrologists and I'd say, I just want you to tell me about the really dark, bad stuff that may happen to me.
What is the matter with you?
Yeah, exactly. They would look at me like I was crazy, which, you know, I don't really blame them.
Well, so then the next step was hiring makeup artists, working with prosthetics.
Well, I found this extraordinary prosthetics expert, and he took a full head to mid-chest silicone cast of me. And then for each version of myself, he would make a silicone version of me. And then I would sit there for 4 or 5 hours and he would apply these prostheses to my face.
So what did they do to you?
Well, there were so many. I mean, the very first one I did actually, or one of the very first ones I did, was actually one of the hardest, which was that I was, he made me into a man in his 90s. What I did was I hired an actress to be, I mean, the other thing about these shoots was they were like small movie productions. I would hire actors and actresses. I would look for locations. I'd have a set designer or a wardrobe designer or a stylist or something happen there. So what happened was this person, I was in a wheelchair and she wheeled me around the park. And so there's a photograph of me where I'm sort of asleep in my wheelchair and she's sitting on the bench texting, which is exactly what I did with my father when he was alive. And this shot I did 3 or 4 months after my dad had died. And I should also actually mention I took acting lessons. Because, look, I don't like being in front of the camera. I'm a disastrous actor, but I really wanted to try and feel what it was like to be those versions of myself.
Well, looking at that photograph, you'd never know that you're not a 90-year-old slumped over man, maybe asleep.
I'll tell you what was extraordinary about that particular picture, actually. As you grow up, you become accustomed to the way in which people look at you. And so to suddenly go from 45 or 44 to 95 is extraordinary because people are looking at you as a 95-year-old man. And when you are a 95-year-old man in a wheelchair, you are invisible to the world because you're rubbish, you're refuse, you're not worth anything. So people look right through you.
Somebody else took the photo, obviously, because you're the subject. What did you think? How did you react the first time you saw the photo?
Well, there were two things. One is looking in the mirror after Adam, who's the makeup artist, had put all the makeup on. And I thought I looked like my father.
And was that a good thing, a bad thing?
It was a shocking thing. I didn't realize how much I was being my father in that picture. The things he would do with his hands, the way he would kind of sleep.
What did your family think when they saw the picture?
Well, Carla, my wife, didn't like any of them at all. And I understand that. I mean, there's one where I've committed suicide. I'm in a bathtub full of blood. And she can't look at that picture at all. I mean, Lulu, my daughter, who's now 6, just thought it was highly entertaining. She, and I'll tell you what, actually, everyone universally seems, there's one where I'm obese and everyone loves Fat Phil. I don't know whether it's because I seem very avuncular or whatever it is, but yeah, Lulu thought they were hilarious because it was just her dad dressing up.
Tell me about some of the other personas you created.
There's one that I really love, in a way. It's me. I'm in a nightclub. I've got this extraordinary mullet. Have you seen that one?
Is that the one with you?
I'm dancing.
You're dancing and you look like an old biker guy.
Yeah. And there's a woman giving me this look of, why are you here? What are you doing here?
And you've got a chain around your neck. You look like you're, you know, your Harley must be parked outside.
Right. People always ask me if you had to choose one, which one? And I think it would be that one because I have no sense of myself in a way. I have no sense of where I'm supposed to be. And I don't care. You know, I'm just there and it doesn't matter that I'm in the wrong place.
It's such a creepy picture, though. Really? I can't believe you'd choose that one. There's one of you as a new age guru.
Because I love that character. I love that character. Well, actually, sorry, what were you saying? The guru ones?
But I mean, there's one of you as a new age guru with, you know, flowing white hair and you're all dressed in white and you're talking into a microphone. I mean, that one's kind of scary, but it still looks like a preferable life to the tattooed biker guy.
You're quite right, actually. That would be much more preferable because I've got a lovely suit and sort of a gold watch and also, and obviously got lots of money and I'm sort of bamboozling people left, right and center.
The creepiest ones are actually you in these sort of perverted versions of success. I mean, there's some really creepy, successful versions of you.
Like the plastic surgery one. I'm looking at camera and it's like a party shot, party photograph. And I've had a lot of plastic surgery, basically. My face looks very unusual, shall we say. I'm obviously old, but I want to look young. And I look so disturbing. I look in the mirror and I think I look great. And people look at me and think I look like a monster.
Hmm. So, Phil, you spent like 3 years doing this, right?
Yeah.
And you did, I don't know, how many different characters, personas did you wind up creating?
I think between 15 and 20. And I'll tell you, I was really bloody relieved when I was finished.
I bet your wife was too.
I was so happy. She was delighted.
So I'm curious, when you looked at the mirror when you were in one of these characters, did you see yourself or did you see a monster?
No, I saw myself. I mean, one of the things that was extraordinary about doing it was just letting go of who you are now and letting go of vanity. I mean, I'm not saying I'm, you know, a Greek demigod, but to be incredibly unattractive, from going from sort of being relatively okay looking to being incredibly unattractive isn't a really fascinating experience, and to let go of that is really interesting.
How so?
Well, again, going back to the thing I said earlier, just the way in which people look at you differently. So when I was that guy, the kind of rocker guy, I hired all these extras to sort of be in this nightclub scene with me. And they were all young, attractive people, women and men. And it was interesting to have the women look at me with a certain degree of disgust. And 2 years before that, prior, when I started the project, part of me would have wanted to say, I'm not really like this underneath. I'm a normal-looking person underneath. But I was okay with that. It was very liberating to be looked at like that somehow.
Why was it liberating?
I can't explain it. I don't know.
Because you felt like you could let go of the part of all of us, the continual striving to look good or to be acceptable?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's the thing. I mean, I found that it was much easier to act because I had all these layers of prosthetics on my face. So because I was kind of hidden, but yet it was still me, it was much easier to sort of get into the acting side of things.
So how do you feel that you changed over the course of the project? Because I can't imagine it wouldn't have had some fairly profound impact on, you know, the way you feel like you are in the world, and certainly on your, you know, your thoughts about the future.
I think that at some point towards the end, I realized that I just felt lighter. I didn't weigh as much as I used to, emotionally or spiritually. And that was a real revelation to me, that I just suddenly thought to myself, I'm finished. And so I feel that way now. And I'm not obsessive about I don't think about all the sharp, dark, shadowed landscapes that may lie ahead for me. I don't think about them at all, in fact. Carla, my wife, said I should patent this as a method for therapy.
I was going to say, it actually sounds like a weird form of therapy. Would you recommend
she said
it
people
to other
come
people?
In, yeah, they come in, they spend 5 hours getting prosthetics put on them, they live as that person, that version for, you know, a couple of days, and then they'll be all good.
Actually, I think there's something to it. I mean, don't you find that before you did this, you might look in the mirror and wonder, you know, I wonder what I'll look like when I'm 90 or whatever, and then feel that bit of fear, a little bit of terror?
Because it's unknown. And now that it's known as much as the future can be known, which is not at all really, I don't have that fear. And it's quite beautiful to not have it.
Phil Toledano is an artist and photographer. His photographs are on exhibition in Germany and Italy this summer, and they're also in a book called Maybe. If you want to see some of them, visit our website. That's at ttbook.org.
I love your funny face, your sunny, funny face, for your a cutie with more than beauty. You've got a lot of personality for me.
You fill of course, the thing about radio is there are no faces. Sometimes I really wish I could see you, but it's always nice to hear from you. Let us know what you thought about this hour and what topics you'd like to hear us take on next. Post on our Facebook page. To the Best of Our Knowledge comes to you from Wisconsin Public Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. Today's show was produced by Sarah Nix, with help from Raymond Tungekar, Doug Gordon, and Charles Monroe Kane. Our theme music comes from Steve Mullen from Walk West Music. Kirill Owen is our technical director. Steve Paulson is our executive producer, and I'm Ann Strange-Champs. Thanks for listening.